Welcome to another episode of Under the Mango Tree, a podcast of Vila Sul residents of the Goethe Institute Salvador Bahia. Here we embrace artistic research, global exchange, and the stories that arrive when Salvador meets the world. Well, I'm Audrey Anunciação, a playwright, director, and researcher born in Salvador Bahia. In 2026, the theme of the residence is Fabrics of Narratives, reflecting Salvador as a place where different histories, cultures, and identities have intertwined over centuries. Today we are joined Maria José Murillo, a Peruvian artist and textile maker whose practice explores weaving as a living system of memory, identity, and re-existence. Rooted in Andean textile epistemologies, her work connects ancestral knowledge with contemporary narratives. In Salvador, she will explore textiles as a carriers of multiple stories and experience. We are also joined by Dudu Quintanilha, a Brazilian-Argentinian artist based in Berlin working across video, performance, and photograph. His practice investigates perception, spirituality, and sensory experience, creating open narratives between memory and imagination. During the residence, he will further develop his research in dialogue with Salvador's cultural and historical layers. Welcome, Dudu, Maria José, for this talk under the mango tree in Salvador. We are very happy that you both are here for the Vila Sul residence. It's very, very nice to have you both here. Welcome. So, tell me, when was this coming here? How was your trip to Salvador?
Thank you, Aldri, for the nice welcoming. When I arrived in Salvador, it was last week, actually last Sunday, that I arrived first at around 10:30 p.m. And my trip was from Belgium, from Brussels. I did a short connection in Madrid, Spain. Because now I am living in Brussels, I am an artist from the south of Peru. I was born and raised in Arequipa. And in the last 2 years, I've been living in Brussels, Belgium.
Okay. And you, Dudu, how was your trip to Salvador?
First of all, thank you. Thank you for hosting us. My trip to Salvador was very nice, actually. I flew from Berlin. I live in Berlin. I'm based there since... It's going to be 5 years now. And then I had the connection in Lisbon. I actually had enough time to get out of the airport and eat something. I really like Lisbon. And then I arrived here in Salvador for the first time. Also on Sunday evening. It's been a week and 2 days.
Yeah, it's written here that you are Brazilian Argentina. Yeah. You are born in Argentina and Brazil. Where were you born?
So my it's a bit messy, but I was born in Bauru, in São Paulo, and then I spent my childhood in no Rio de Janeiro, where my father's family is from, and at the age of 7, I moved to Buenos Aires, and I grew up there, and my mother's family is from there, my mother as well, and then I came back to Brazil as an adult, and then I moved to Germany. I'm in Germany since 9 years.
But have you ever been in Salvador before?
I never been.
Oh, first time in Salvador.
First time.
Cool. And you, Maria, the first time in Brazil or not?
Well, kind of, I would say, because some years ago, let's say around 10 years ago, I was in Cusco, then I did a road trip to Madre de Dios, and we crossed the border by car to Rio Branco, the Acre region. Uh-huh. So that was my first encounter with Brazil. But it was very brief, and yeah, now this experience will be completely different and more enriching because we will stay here for 2 long, beautiful months. So I'm very excited to experience Brazil, and especially Salvador, da Bahia, because Salvador for me has a lot of interest things like the beginning of the Bahia music, no? The music that was born from here, and all those cultural expressions, also religious-wise and artistic-wise in general, yeah.
Yeah, every artist has a journey in life. I mean, everyone has a journey in life, but can you tell us about your artistic journey? You both?
What is my artistic journey? I think I'm going to say something that is in my head. I think I found art when I actually found myself very lost when I was a teenager. For some personal things in life, I actually had a turbulent growing up and a turbulent teenage years, which was, of course, were like also lots of fun. But in that middle of like finding myself lost and being rejected from school or expelled, I don't know how to say it in English, I fell in love with photography at the age of 16. That was my first encounter with art and like finding passion through seeing photography and photographers that I admire until today. And then that was my beginning. I did a very significant trip at the age of 17 to Brazil alone. I raised some money and bought my first camera. I remember Canon EOS 1 with film, and I brought a bunch of film and I came to Brazil, to Rio de Janeiro, like stopping in every city I could. After that, then I formally decided to study arts. Actually, the first career was to study film. And then I, sitting in a long, long class, I realized that it wasn't for me to be there. So I decided to change to visual arts. And once I entered the contemporary art universe, it actually like expanded all the possibilities that I had encountered till then. So like, I would say my beginning was being very inspired with photography. I think like photography was in a way helping me to connect with life, with the world, probably like helping me also to not to be so shy. And then I would say the second passion, or like a parallel passion that I found, was meeting artists. Actually, like I remember my first friends were like probably fashion designers, people from the night. It was fun for a while, but then it also became a little bit troubling, but it was very inspiring. I think like once I found contemporary art, like it did expand my mind, and I started to, back then already, change to video, and performance came to play a very big role because, yeah, I was very fascinated about the aspect of documentation of photography. Mm-hmm. And then once I changed to video, I started to experiment with moving image, and performance started to happen in front of the camera. And it's actually something that I do until today.
And it's funny because you first begin with photograph, and photograph is something like with no movement. I mean, at least when you see it, you know that every photo has a movement in our reception of it. But it's indeed it's stopped, and then you change for video. That is, they match with movement. So how did you cross this line? When do you think that now it's time to work with movement images?
I remember very well, actually, in the first condensed contemporary art program that I did was in 2010. And back then I was documenting my life with photography, you know, like I was working in different things. Maybe it's not to get so specific, but I was documenting and like kind of seeing my traces around the city and around different spaces, connecting with different people and so on. And in 2011, I was working for a photographer, and he bought this house which was like very destroyed and empty. And back then in Buenos Aires, there was this fear of like empty houses being occupied by people, random people, so then you would not be able to take them out. So my boss was like, do you want to please take the house and use it as studio until I find out what to do with this? So I occupied the house and took it as a studio. It was really, really destroyed, the place. So I got actually very inspired. And I was like, one of the first videos that I did there in video was with a very simple camera I had, was because I wanted to break a wall. So there was a dry wall that I laid into some metal. So I built up like kind of a catwalk, a passerelle, or I don't know how to call it. And I started to walk on it and break it with my steps. So like that was the first time that I actually needed to document not only a pose or the time passing, but the movement and the sound of the breaking of that.
Maria Jose, you were born in Peru.
Yes.
Yeah. Today you are artist, the style maker. So tell me about your journey from the beginning. When did you get to where you are now?
Okay, I will try to share it in the most short way. Well, it starts in Arequipa, in the south of Peru. My family are from there. My father is from Cusco, from the highlands of Peru. And after finishing high school, I moved to Lima, to the capital, to study art. My brother, whose name is Dante, he's also an artist. He was already starting in the School of Arts, in the university. He already was starting 1 year before me. So when we arrived, we were living both together. But my parents stayed in Arequipa. So I started, I did the program of painting, which lasted 6 years. The first 2 years were like an introduction to the arts, mm-hmm. then the years of the specialization, and the 2 years that you receive, the last 2 years that you receive like an individual studio inside the university. You know, you have your key and you can explore more in depth your own project within the painting program. So I already knew back then that when I started receiving this studio and trying to develop more personal projects, I realized that painting was not for me because the lineage of painting that I was being taught during this time, during these years, it was coming from a completely Eurocentric perspective, no? We were learning how to paint under a palette of color that comes from the Eurocentric tradition. And also our art history classes were completely oriented to Western art history. And we none of our professors spoke us about the textile lineage or the art lineage of our ancestors, no? The indigenous horizon in Peru, the pre-Hispanic ancestral artists from ancient Peru. Nobody spoke to us, even I think now, even in a program such as painting, that we have had such a rich tradition of natural dyeing. It's a whole science that our ancestors developed, no? Through color technology with nature, in dialogue with nature. So all of those indigenous knowledges have been completely erased from the Peruvian westernized curricula in our local art schools. And then that's when I acknowledged that I was not connecting with that tradition of painting that I was being taught, and I was limited to cover this kind of textile with pigment only from the surface without acknowledging about our heritage, no? Our textile heritage. So that's when I started to navigate. I left the medium of painting a bit aside, and I started navigating other. I started exploring with materials that I could find in every day, like plastic, different type of materials. And that's what this kind of work of exploring materiality brought me to some years later to apply to an MFA program in the US in Chicago, in the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. I got accepted to the Fiber and Material Studies program. I chose that specific program because for me, material studies, for me, that was something that was connecting to the work that I was doing back then. But in reality, when I arrived to the program, to the MFA, the first thing that I saw was a whole. They did a departmental tour, and the first thing that they showed to us was a huge room, classroom, full of looms, like the weaving machines, the floor looms they are called, and a lot of yarns all over the place. And when we moved to the other room, it's called the Textile Resource Centers, so which is like a library focused on solely on textiles. And I saw that it was divided by continents, but Peru, my country, had a whole shelf full of books of textiles. So back then, I didn't know that I could be a contemporary artist, and my language could also be weaving. I was completely unaware of that, no? In my limited westernized mind that I was trained in back in Peru at art school. So I thought, once I saw that, I thought, these 2 years of the master program will be completely revolutionary. Like, something will happen, no? And that's exactly what happened when I started learning how to weave. Everything changed. It was a complete, first of all, it was a complete acknowledgement that was my medium as an artist. Textiles was my medium, and weaving was my language. It was completely present. I felt it. At the same time, I was having this kind of crisis because I was far away, not in my in my homeland, and I was studying my own culture through a Western lens, through this department, because the School of the Art Institute is based. It's coming from the Bauhaus School in Germany, and in Germany there is an very important, renowned modernist weaver, Annie Albers, and she already passed away, but she developed all her research on textiles, and she really could put the textile medium as in the same level as painting and sculpture, like from something considered as domestic and craft. She really was able to locate it in the same horizontal level as the other high art mediums.
It's very nice because narratives is in everywhere, in the nature and everything, but in a standard way of thinking, when you try to tell a story or to narratives, narrate something, you go through videos, you go through books, writing stories, fiction novels. When did you got the idea that you can tell stories by your textiles?
Yeah, stories are embedded in this process itself of textiles. It's not only the surface. Most of people think that what communicates within the textile is the surface or the iconography or the colors, but it goes beyond that. That's only the surface. That's only the what you see, no, what it's visible. But it has several layers. A textile, I conceive a textile like the Andean conception of a textile, which I am informed by, conceives the textile as a living entity, which is three-dimensional. So in this three-dimensionality, the process itself, the chain of creation of the weaving, also communicates. Like since the beginning, and the beginning is, for example, for the Andean world, the taking care of the alpacas, the animals themselves. This kind of relation that weavers and animals establish reciprocally, no? They are considered family members for Andean weavers. So since that conception, it starts all the process and all the meanings that are already embedded in this whole process of creating a textile.
Textile with story. Your textile tells stories.
Textile tells stories. Yes.
Very interesting. You tell stories about with your work. Also, there's a lot of a narrative component in your work, and we know that your work deals with presence, ritual, and also perception. How do these elements forms a narrative? How do these elements tell stories of us?
To be honest, I understand this idea of a narrative that is telling you something, right? But I feel like exactly what you mentioned, presence, ritual, and perception, is connected very much to, what one can feel. Like, I don't know how to explain. I don't think that necessarily there is a story or that there is an intention of a story or a narrative by activating presence. To be honest, I'm getting a little bit lost with like trying to force to get a meaning out of like the idea of a narrative between these three ideas. I don't necessarily see it, to be honest. Like, I don't... I want to say something, like, maybe polemical, but I don't tell stories. I don't tell a story and I don't do narrative film. Like, I don't go against it, but it's not my language. Like, I don't... Usually, things are missing. Things are left a little bit in the abstract. Things are like having a chance to be experimental, to be sensorial. In that sense, I feel a little bit forced to like have to find a connection to a narrative in that sense of telling something.
Yeah, because sometimes the narrative can tell us something or they can make us feel something. So and somehow it is guiding people through experience different.
I agree, but I also feel like there are some types of work and some types of creating presence that actually comes with like, not necessarily through like a narrative, but through a sensorial aspect of the body or of the perception.
Could you say that this invisible, intangible experience of a work, how does it expressed with to us? For example, you work also with video installations. How you handle the video installation with this perception, a ritual, and presence? How you connect all these things? When you're doing a video installation, what you do first? You do a project, or how is your research?
That's not exactly how I start to work, actually. Like, to me, like, what I do is like conceptual research through the body. I build a space where I will go and research ideas, mostly with other people. So like, for me, what is important is like that the work at some point becomes, in Lisha Clark's words, becomes a relational object, like something that I can relate to and something that helps me create a relation with the other. So in that sense, the work is at some point guiding me. Yeah. It changes. I am very much inspired in entering a room when I need to build up a video installation and like position things and think of the experience, possible experience of someone confronting to a virtual space of the video, no? And going back to the idea of that's kind of an architecture of like how to exhibit the work, but they change, to be honest. I usually prefer to work with projectors because I like the space they take in the room. I like the idea that the light is traveling and mirroring and flipping. I like that a shadow can be projected in between the screen and the light. But what I was going to say about the narrative, for me, the idea of a narrative is not so important. Like, I know it's against the title, but the idea of like, what am I documenting is more important for me. And if this is still a documentation when it's done, because like through the process of filming, I actually distort the image and distort the narrative. For example, this work that I did with a ritual that I filmed in São Paulo some years ago, that is specifically about a ritual, I don't show any image. I turn off the camera, I just show the sound and I create images with the light. So like the experience of the person in the room is completely different, but it's not separate from the experience of the people in the room during the ritual. It's completely new. It's not detached completely, but it's another experience. I think like also seeing a work twice, it also like creates new experience.
Cool. Let's connect now to Salvador. Like, Maria, your practice is rooted in Andean textile epistemologies.
Yeah, more than epistemologies that are more connected to only the knowledge production, I would say ways of knowing and being in the world, both.
Okay. How do you see this narrative dialoguing with Salvador, for example?
Yes, more than epistemologies, I would say cosmologies, let's say. It's a more precise and broader world that gathers everything, no?
And what's your expectation here?
Wow, I have a lot of, I am with a lot of interests here in Salvador. First, I'm interested in this, what is going on in terms of this layering, cultural layering that exists, that conforms the different identities of Salvador. That's mainly my interest, because in my own work, I'm exploring this juxtaposition of cultural horizons. I'm interested in how in my personal experience, how the ancestral indigenous horizon coexists. I embody both, like the ancestral indigenous horizon and the European as well, the Western horizon, and how I am navigating within both at the same time without erasing one or the other. No, I need to see how can I embody both as a contradiction in itself. And Salvador, for me, it's quite, it seems like a city very vibrant, and I want to navigate further this idea of coexistence and multiplicity within the social fabric.
In this way, I think you have a connection with him, because there's a kind of spirituality when you're talking about ancestors, and then they try to find this connection, this energy connection, that we can say it as a narrative or not, but it's an energy of ancestral. And yesterday we were in the party here, and I talked to Dudu. Dudu told me that sometimes yesterday you told me that you are interested in this connection between art and spirituality or something like this. Tell me, how your work deal with these two things, like spirituality and art, and specific about Salvador? Connect to Salvador, because Salvador is a place, there's a lot of spirituality here in work, in religions, not only in religions, but in the way we live here. It's like we are always trying to connect to something that's not really here, like in presence, physical. So how do you deal with this idea of connecting art and spirituality in your work and in a place like Salvador, that the spirituality is very strong?
To me, the interest in spirituality is still, it's not like that. I feel like, to me, for us artists to be aware of the political power or potential of our work, it is important. You know, it's like this tool that today I find way more important than 10 years ago. 10 years ago, but to me personally, it feels more necessary to find other aspects or other potentials within my work or the artistic practice. And I am considering the importance of like also being aware of the spiritual potentials that our work has, not only in experiencing to see the work, but making the work. Usually, like, I like to work with people. So that's an important thing, like to add into perception and ritual. I also like to work with others to include other perspectives in my processes. In that sense, I come to Salvador with the expectation to learn and study, to visit spaces, to be permeable, I don't know how to say in English, to also then enter an area like a rehearsal space. That's where everything happens for me, no? And start to create material through the body. Actually, so I have two expectations, two lines of images that I want to research and to experiment with. One is nature and architectural driven, and the other one is with the body. So through performance.
Good, good. There's a lot of theater groups here that's trying also to work with the narrative. It's a bit like you are dealing, like, not telling story exactly as the standard way of thing, but the actor is trying to create a kind of perception moment with the audience for us to try to find and to connect with art in a different way, not directly with the words and the book. Maria, let's go back a bit.
Let's go back.
What draws you to Salvador? What was the point in the beginning when you decided, okay, I go to Vila Sul, I go to Salvador? What draws you to us?
Yeah, I was. I couldn't finish my whole path through my art and how I ended up in Chicago, and that brought me back to my ancestrality, no, to Andean weaving. And I wanted to also add that how weaving changed radically my life throughout those years. And then that brought me back to Peru. I returned immediately after my master program. I returned. That was trying to get to that point. I returned to Cusco to work as the coordinator of the education department of the Centro de Textiles Tradicionales del Cusco, which is an organization founded by indigenous weavers from Chinchero, a district in Cusco. And it was founded in 1996 by Nilda Callañaupa, the director, and many other female weavers. And throughout those years, my work, I left aside, even though I was finishing a master program in the US, I left aside my art practice in order to focus on my work in the center, no? Because I didn't want to replicate what many people do, going to indigenous communities and mostly extract information, no? Extract knowledges as anthropologists, archaeologists, like these scientific disciplines coming from the Western world have been developing themselves historically by an extractive approach or practice. And I didn't want to continue like to replicate that. And I wanted to really do our work from the ground, from the base, with the weavers. So my work mainly consisted in creating events, cultural events from the education department to the 250 or around almost 300 adult weavers from different communities of the Cusco region. I needed to create events for them. And it was something new for me. No? I was like just coming from an artist world that I don't work with planning and creating events, suddenly to work in dialogue with the weavers and also with young weavers, because they have the young weavers group also from the different 10 communities that are part of the center. So this approach really opened me the door to a vibrant ecosystem of contemporary creators of the Andes. So that is when my perspective of what is contemporary art completely shifted. Mm-hmm. I realized that contemporary art is also in tradition. Traditional artists from Cusco that are weaving, they are doing contemporary work, and it's very powerful. And the contemporary world, it's not only contemporary art, is not only in the cities, in the Western hubs. It's everywhere. It's in tradition itself.
It breaks a standard that when we are talking about contemporary, I always think that's something very new, that was born yesterday. Exactly. It doesn't reach the traditions very of our ancestors that was very, for example, vanished somehow. Yesterday, you told me something about identity, and I think identity is a tool for your work, as I know.
Yes.
Yeah. And Brazil is a place, that's why I talk about Salvador, with a lot of the identities crossing, because we are made of, we are born from a colonization. So we have some ancestors from Colonia and some ancestors from here, a region, and others from Africa. So we have three different elements of identity together. And sometimes you lost yourself here in Brazil. You don't know if you are from the ancestor of Africa or ancestor of a European or ancestor of the region here. So it's a deal for everyone here to understand how is your identity set down. And my question is about you. How is the Indian things? In Peru, you have also this kind of crossing identity issues a lot. Where are you in this crossing?
Yeah, in that juxtaposition, I would say, of identities or cultural horizons, I find my work actually more interested in exploring weaving itself as a place for re-existence. I see it as an identity, as a living system, not only for cultural resistance, but the possibilities that the textile logic gives is a possibility of the encountering of the opposites. Because the weaving logic is based on that. It's a dualistic but complementary relationship. You have the warp and the weft, which constitutes a weaving. So in that, it's like the duality in complementarity. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for me, the holism is weaving, and by consequence, I'm more interested in weaving as an identity in it of itself.
Yeah, today is the first day of you both here in Vila Sur Residence. So probably we'll meet each other again in the end. So as my last question for you both to give the end speech, would be like, what is the expectation of you both of being in this territory? Or even if maybe there's no expectation, it's also because, Audrey, I have no expectation. I will see what happened. So what can you tell me, you both, about this moment that's coming?
First of all, I want to say that I actually don't feel like a reference for spirituality. And I don't think my work is. And second, I'm in between, actually, like in between of like having some illusions of like what is possible to do here. I think in a sense, I want to be very present, like, and connected to the possibility of doing an artist residency here. So I'm very open. That's my state. Instead of like being full of expectations, I'm more like open-minded.
Yeah, and you, Maria Jose?
In my case, I see this residency as a tinkui. It's an Andean notion, which is like a cultural encountering between difference, different sources, different elements, and it's a cultural exchange, no? So I see this opportunity that I am here in Salvador with these other three fabulous artists that I am sharing time and space for a really horizontal exchange and openness to see how is it going to influence in my practice and vice versa. It's a reciprocal dialogue, a mutual dialogue.
Good. So I hope you both have a nice time here in this cross-identity city and the spiritual city. And I hope you both have a great encounters. That's very important because you're going to encounter a lot of people, different people with a lot of different ideas. So I hope it to be a great moment. So that's what Vila Sul stands for: meetings, discovering new experience and ways of imagination in the world. If you want to know more about Vila Sul residence, stay tuned for the next episode of Under the Mango Tree, a Gate Institute podcast. Bye-bye!